Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the next episode of Cultdom in Audio. My name is Les. I'm one of your hosts. Joining me in the room also is Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hey, I'm the official co-host now of the show.
Woohoo! We have a co-host. Mike and I hope we'll be taking you through the many enjoyable discussions that we will have in the future, as I'm sure they'll be enjoyable. So.
Oh, there's just so much to talk about, you know, it's just like where to begin and where to be, and, you know, start with this, you know, and you picked a great subject for today. Might as well start with the top movies of 2009.
Yep. And do you want to do it or shall I? Because I've got lists.
You start with your list, and I'm in the process of compiling my list, and most of it's from memory anyway.
Okay. Now, this is the top. So I'm getting this from actually JoeBlow.com, because this is the one that had the most. I guess you'd say, a rounded topic of movies. A lot of them are not genre films, so we're going to preface this by saying we're going to talk about stuff that we saw in 2009. It doesn't have to be a sci-fi or fantasy film. It could be a comedy, a drama, a weepy chick flick, whatever we really saw. And it doesn't necessarily have to be from 2009, because there's a few movies that I've just put off watching and finally watched and enjoyed that I'll throw out there, and I don't know, Mike may have the same kind of impression, but here I go with a top 20.
I might
20.
Stay away from the chick flick thing, though. Sorry.
All right, well, yeah. Some of them are good, all right? Some of them are really bad.
Yeah.
But it has to do with whatever floats your boat, I guess. This is just an overall list of stuff that I'd like to talk about, good and bad. I'm going to give the list, and then we'll discuss different movies if we want to.
Sure.
One of them is one that I was absolutely floored when I saw it, and I was very surprised, and I'm going to start us off with a bang, but it was the Peter Jackson-produced District 9. I don't know if you saw that one or not, Mike, but you need to if you haven't. It's probably one of the most inventive sci-fi films I have ever seen.
Was it a Peter Jackson? I know Peter Jackson produced it for the American audience, but I thought it was a South African film, actually.
I think it is a South African film, and Peter Jackson got his grubby little protuberances on it, but he, you know, having his name got it in more theaters, I think, and that's good because it's fantastic. Have you seen it?
It's on my Netflix list. I've seen enough about it. I know the premise to make the conversation interesting.
Yeah, we may do a show on that once people have seen it, because it's very inventive, and I didn't think I was going to enjoy it because I was watching the previews, and I was like, this is just a popcorn flick, and then somebody brought it over one night, and I sat down, and I was captivated from the second it started to the second end. It shot like a documentary, and about halfway through, the documentary disappears, and then you're like in the middle of the plight of the main character. That's what the actor who played that guy is very, very good, and I was excited to see that he's the one that's playing Murdoch in the 18 movie that's coming up, which will be another show, too. but I digress. Let's move on the list. The second one on my list is Observe and Report, which stars Seth Rogen as a mall cop. It's kind of like the dramedy version of Paul Blart mall cop. It's more situational humor. It's not like potty humor. It's just, you know, a guy's slow descent into being crazy, being a mall cop. And I'm not knocking mall cops. One of my best friends is a security officer at a mall. And they have a tougher job than you think. These movies make them look really goofy sometimes, you know, like riding around on their Segways and such. But it's not like that. It's you have to deal with a bunch of crap that you would not believe, especially skateboard kids.
Oh, yeah.
Who have no respect for authority at all. But
I liked the film because Seth Rogen played the character just really well, living at home with his mom still, and, you know, the whole, you know, being in love with the girl behind the perfume counter, just a typical what you would expect almost.
Right.
And job extremely seriously.
He doesn't do it over the top, but you could tell he's somewhat cracked in the head.
Exactly.
He thinks he's just and right and doing everything, and then the cast of characters that back him up are just hilarious. I mean, you have to see Observe and Report to understand what I'm talking about, but it's just one of those movies that you think is going to be a straight comedy, and it ends up being more of a realistic, dramatic, what would probably really happen in this guy's life, as opposed to just doing cheap laughs and gimmicks. It's kind of like the movie with Michael Douglas falling down if it was set in a mall with a mall cop, I think.
Okay, I could see that.
Finally just snaps and goes, you know what, screw it, I'm going to do whatever I want, and you're going to do what I want, or else. And the scene where he fights with the police is probably one of the golden moments of the movie. The next movie on this list is The Taking of Pelham 123, which is a remake of a very classic movie starring Walter Matthau, which is considered one of the, I guess, top 50 classic films. I honestly have not seen this. It just didn't strike me as something I want to watch. I mean, Denzel Washington's in it, and so is John Travolta, and they look like they're just playing themselves like they usually do in the movies. And I think James Gandolfini's in it also. He's probably doing his Tony Soprano shtick, so it's kind of like...
I really couldn't take John Travolta seriously in the role. It just...
Right.
It didn't fit. You know, Denzel was awesome in it, as he... Denzel plays Denzel in pretty much every movie he does, and he does a fantastic job at it. But John Travolta, he was not believable in the movie.
I don't think Travolta is that menacing. I think he plays a wonderful good guy, and the only time I ever felt he was menacing in a movie was in Face Off. And Face Off is one of those aberrations that, you know, you have two masterful scene chewers, which is my definition for hammy over actor, in Nicolas Cage and John Travolta having to play their main characters and then swap halfway through the movie and actually be playing the other character trapped in their body. It works. It works on so many levels. Not to get off on a Face-Off tangent, but if you've never seen Face-Off, it is an, I guess you could call it a sci-fi film because of the technology they use to switch their faces, but the rest of the movie is just a straight-out action drama with a lot of character development.
Oh, it's
a lot
of my favorite movies with Nicolas Cage in it, too.
I mean, if you want to know how good an actor Nicolas Cage is, watch that. Now, my friends and I, Mike, have this thing we call the Nicolas Cage factor.
Okay.
Nicolas Cage is either really super good in it or really super bad in it, but he's never in the middle.
Yeah,
so
I tried watching Ghost Rider this last week, and it was just like, talk about bad Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, he's bad in it, but there's other portions of the movie that are actually pretty good, and they stuck with the mythos of the thing and didn't screw with it too much. So I'm not a huge Ghost Rider fan, but the movie was enjoyable enough to not turn it off halfway through.
Right.
Speaking of turning it off halfway through, the next movie on the list is Land of the Lost, horrible, horrible, horrible. The only reason I even watched it is because someone else rented it. It was on, and I sat down and watched about 30 minutes of it and started going on Facebook. So that should tell you, as a genre fan, it couldn't hold my interest. And I used to love the show.
Oh, it doesn't have anything to do with the old show. That's the problem. The only thing similar was the Flea Stacks, and that wasn't
right.
Even, you know.
I'll admit that the stuff they did with Chaka was pretty funny on a basic Porky-style level. But other than that, I think you could have probably put a different actor in Will Ferrell's spot. It would have been a better movie. You know, put an actual action hero type everyman character. Heck, Nicolas Cage probably would have been better in that movie.
Kind of, I'd agree.
But they, you know, Will and Holly are supposed to be teenagers.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Grown up. And so it's kind of weird to have Marshall in love with Holly.
Well, you know, it's the whole incense thing, you know.
Right. I would just in my opinion, and it sounds like Mike might agree with it, skip this one, no matter how much you love Land of the Lost, because it will just destroy your enjoyment of the original show, because you'll see Will Ferrell being Will Ferrell watching it.
Oh, very much so. It's like William, we tried watching it with William, and we had to shut it off. It had, because, you know, the old show was a Sid and Marty Krofft show. It was, you know, a kid show. And the new one was just miserable. And I was embarrassed the stuff they were talking about for the kids. And
not only that, but you could be afraid that your kid's going to get his intellect dumbed down just by watching it.
Well, that's most Will Ferrell movies, but that's a whole
Well, you know, there's been a couple of funny ones, but he's usually funnier when he's playing a secondary character.
Right, he's a good backup, not a good lead.
Right. My favorite character by him is he's actually playing Marshall Willenholly in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. He's funny in that.
He's a fabulous role in that. He was great in Old School.
Yeah, Old School, but he was a secondary character. He was there just long enough to make it good. Man, he's so stupid, but he's funny. Wedding Crashers, he's good in the few scenes he's in that. But you give him, like, everyone loves that Ron Burgundy movie. I don't see what's funny about it. I'll admit, I did like Talladega Nights, but I think it's because it made fun of NASCAR more than it had Will Ferrell in it.
Oh, exactly.
And Sacha Baron Cohen was good in it. And he's on our list, so let's keep moving. The next one is one I completely enjoyed. It's Public Enemies with Johnny Depp and Billy Crudup and Christian Bale. And it's about John Dillinger. And it's fabulously shot. I'm sure there's a lot of it that's not factually accurate, but it was an enjoyable film to see.
It's a Hollywood movie. How much fact can you really have in it?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they did change a lot in a lot of, quote, factual films. But, you know, Johnny Depp is good. I honestly, to God, don't think I've ever seen a bad role that Johnny Depp played. There's been some bad movies. But Johnny Depp, he's a lot like John Cusack. He plays his nuances, and he makes a character better, even if it's a stinker of a character.
Well, Johnny Depp had to win me over, because the Johnny Depp I originally remember was from 21 Jump Street back in the
right. 80s,
and hated his character in it. I was the one who jumped up in the theater when the first Nightmare on Elm Street had Johnny Depp in it, and he got sucked into the bed by Freddy Krueger and got killed.
Yes, I think a lot of people, including Depp, like to forget that he's in the first movie.
Exactly. But over time, he's matured, he's become a better actor, and I agree with you. Now he can't really do much wrong. He becomes the character. Hunter S. Thompson said he did a better Hunter S. Thompson than he does himself, you know.
Right.
and that was Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
A lot of people don't realize, just to go off on a side tangent, which we do, that that's the second movie about Hunter S. Thompson that was out. The first one was a Bill Murray film called Where the Buffalo Roam. And it's pretty good, too, but I think Bill Murray and Hunter S. Thompson spent a lot of time partying and didn't spend a lot of time working on the movie.
Exactly.
And it just doesn't work. But Johnny Depp was great, man. That's a classic film. And that's probably one of those that cemented Johnny Depp as a power in Hollywood as far as acting is concerned. And I think he stays a lot out of the Hollywood politics. He lives in Paris, I believe.
He does.
And, you know, gets his scripts, does his movies, comes in. He doesn't even dial his character. He becomes the character. Nicolas Cage and Denzel Washington play themselves a lot, but Johnny Depp's different in every movie he does.
Well, he's a true character actor that way.
Right. I think my favorite character he's ever played is Ed Wood in the movie Ed Wood by Tim Burton. And when he works with Burton, magic happens, I think. They're just such a good pairing. Because you've got that. You've got the new Alice in Wonderland that's coming out that looks like it's going to be a fun movie to watch, especially in 3D. But it, unlike another movie we're going to mention later, you don't have to see it in 3D, I think, to enjoy the movie.
Exactly.
And Depp is playing a completely different character. Another one that's a favorite of mine is Sleepy Hollow. He's fantastic as Ichabod Crane, but he's completely the exact opposite of his character in, say, Blow. He's just not playing himself. He's playing the character.
Right. Well, he did the same thing with Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tim and Tim Burton just have gone really, 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 you know, they work well together. And he even did, well, what was it? The one where he played the groom to the bride who was dead?
Corpse Bride?
Corpse Bride.
Yeah.
So there's just a history of it, you know, and Tim Burton, we can have a whole show on Tim Burton alone.
We probably should. We haven't done one on Tim Burton. Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, coming up in a couple weeks, Tim Burton.
All right.
Segueing now into horror, a much-anticipated film that I actually kind of enjoyed, being a fan of these horror films, is Friday the 13th, the remake. You know, it's an amped-up, fast-paced remake in the vein of the recent Texas Chainsaw Massacres and the upcoming Nightmare on Elm Street. My question still remains, why do we have to remake these already classic films? And the answer is money, but at least they're finally getting people who kind of are fans of the original, so they're not going to, like, completely reboot it where Jason's wearing a, you know, Halloween mask instead of his hockey mask and all that stuff. And it gives you a little bit interesting kind of origin story for him. It's a very good, fun romp if you haven't seen it. I don't know if you've seen it, Mike, but it's not bad. It's not great. You know, there's a lot of TNA in it, like they're supposed to be in a Friday the 13th movie, but it's, you know, the year 2000 TNA and not 1980s TNA. So it's a little bit more explicit, but
nothing like, oh, my top fell off. How'd that happen? Ah, they kill her. Ah.
You know, it gets so bad in the original Friday the 13th movies when they got to Jason X, they were actually making fun of that in one scene with the virtual reality camper chicks and their TNA running toward Jason. Look, I'm naked. We should have sex. Ha, ha, ha. And then he's like beating one up against a tree in her sleeping bag and she won't die because she's virtual reality. And Jason's like, what's up with this?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you get to the point in the sequels where you're making fun of yourself and you're supposed to be a serious sequel, you've got problems. Next on the list is one I haven't seen yet. It's Funny People with Adam Sandler and Seth Rogen. And it's actually more of a drama than a comedy. And Adam Sandler is another one of those that he's either really good or really bad in it. I mean, there's some of his movies that are classics like Happy Gilmore, which I laugh every time I watch it. And The Wedding Singer, which is my favorite Sandler movie, which I incidentally watched last night. It was on TV. I just never get tired of watching them. Then there's stuff like Mr. Deeds, which is horrible. And I wasn't a big fan of Little Nicky. You know, he does the goofy characters, which you've got your group of people that love Sandler goofy, and you got your group of people that like, you know, straight-laced Sandler. And then he does his dramas, like Punch Drunk Love, which is a weird movie, but Sandler's great in it, and it's dramatic. And what people don't realize is comedy is actually a lot harder than it looks, and most of your best comedians are really good at drama. Robin Williams is a good example of that.
Well, Robin Williams did a great job in, like, One Hour Photo.
Yeah.
And exactly. And also
Good Morning
Fisher
Vietnam
King.
Is a mixture of comedy and drama.
Very much so. Fisher King was fabulous. You know, he made that movie. You know, Jeff Bridges was great in it, but
Jeff Bridges is another one that plays Jeff Bridges.
Well, whenever I see Jeff Bridges, I always just think of the dude.
Right, but the thing is the dude is Jeff Bridges. That's the way he is in every movie.
Was,
yeah, except for maybe The Vanishing. He was kind of creepy in that, the way he talked and stuff, and his long,
exactly.
Flippy hair and glasses.
I actually didn't recognize him at first when he was in Iron Man because he was bald. And I was like, wait,
oh,
a minute,
yeah.
I know the voice.
That's Jeff Bridges.
Exactly.
Yeah, Jeff Bridges has a long movie career. We could probably do a show on him, too, but we won't. The next one on the list is the top cartoon of the year, which is Up by Pixar and Disney. You know, we should just drop the Pixar and just say Apple and Disney, but
that's
we won't.
Right. Well, Steve Jobs said so. Yeah.
Right. Up is a fantastic movie, and it's also one of those, you know, the Pixar films are great at 3D, but you don't have to have the 3D to enjoy them. See,
no.
I think we're going to get a slate of films that are put in 3D because that's the only way to make them really cool and get people to watch them.
No, Up is one of those movies where the story alone, animated or live action, was truly fantastic. It took you from the edges, from both sides. It made you laugh. It made you cry. We saw the movie out in Seattle. We were out there for vacation, and literally within the first 10 minutes of the film, you heard most of the theater crying when they were doing the flashback of him growing up and with his wife. And getting older and her passing away, everyone, you heard literally, oh my God, you know, and literally there wasn't a dry eye in the house. And within 15 minutes, you're cracking up. They just literally, Pixar has gotten so good at creating movies that they can literally hold you from emotion to emotion. And
well, here's a question for you. Have you seen a Pixar film yet? Because you have small kids, I guess, like I do. Have you seen one you haven't enjoyed? I mean, think back to the beginning of Toy Story all the way up to Up. Have you seen one you haven't liked?
Well, I'm a computer artist, so I'm in love with the whole styles. There's certain ones that I didn't like as much, truthfully, but I loved all of them to some extent. Some of them just weren't as strong as other ones, like I felt Ratatouille wasn't as strong. I felt, this is just my own personal opinion, Ratatouille, I thought A Bug's Life were some of the weaker ones, but Monster Inc., Up and Wall-E and The Incredibles was literally a Fantastic Four movie that should have been. It was
right,
better
I
than,
agree with that.
It was better than any, you know, almost better than any comic book movie other than the Batman movies put out in the last 10 years.
I agree with that. A kind of personal favorite of mine is Cars, just because it was just so fun to watch.
Oh, Cars was brilliant on so many different levels, just hitting home with Americana, what's been lost, about American history, and also just having life pass you by while everyone's on such a fast pace, you just need to stop and, you know, see what's around you.
Right.
That was the whole meaning of the movie.
And you can't talk about Pixar without mentioning Toy Story 1 and 2. They're just, to me, the best. It reminds me of my childhood and playing with my toys and actually imagining if they do that kind of stuff when I'm not around. And I'm looking forward to Toy Story 3. And I haven't heard yet. Maybe you know. Did Joss Whedon write this one too?
I hadn't heard that he wrote the third one. I know he's involved with it, but I don't know to what kind of role.
I know he wrote the first two, and just a testament to his writing, and we're going to be talking about him in about 2 weeks. You know, he's created some of the most iconic characters on TV and movies also, and he's another one like Tim Burton or Spielberg or, you know, some of the other greats. I wouldn't say Kubrick, but, you know, people like that. He's going to be one of those that's remembered long after he's gone for his characters, more than some of the guys that are you're looking at now that have these quote blockbusters that are flying through the air that will disappear in about 10 years because they can never achieve the pinnacle of, you know, excellence that they came up with that movie. The next movie on my list is one that was a children's book when I was growing up and I loved, and I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen enough of it to know I'm going to enjoy it, which is Where the Wild Things Are. It just looks super cool. That's all I can say about it.
Visually, it was a stunning movie, and bringing the characters to life was a job very well done. Story wise, it was found it kind of weak. Truthfully, I didn't really like the main character at all.
Right.
And I just, you know, I was just in awe just watching it, and just, you know, the creatures, the characters themselves, the monsters were great. I just couldn't get in with the kid. It's like I wanted to, you know, take him over my knee and spank him. He was a brat.
Do you think they may have picked the wrong kid to be in the movie, or just the way they wrote the character?
Just the way they wrote the character. The kid was great and everything, but there was no repercussions for him running away from home in the book. You know, technically he doesn't leave his room, but here he runs away from his mom after biting her.
You know, in the same vein of children's books to movies, one that I want to see that's not on my list is The Fantastic Mr. Fox. I remember reading that as a kid.
Everyone has loved the film. I have not seen it yet, but it's stop-motion animation, and everyone has been raving about it. I just, you know, I've had to cut back on going to the movies just because it's become a luxury that I can't really afford right now.
Yeah, tell me about it.
And so it's, you know, either going to matinees or waiting until they come out on Netflix. And number one on my list is The Fantastic Mr. Fox, because it's just the cast, the voices they have for it is just supposed to be incredible. And just everything I've seen on YouTube, on various, you know, shorts and everything, it's just breathtaking.
Not to mention the fact that Roald Dahl wrote it, and he's also responsible for the Great Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and the Great Fast Elevator stories. He's just got an imagination like you wouldn't believe.
Exactly.
The next movie on our list was the big one for me for the summer, which was Star Trek. The reimagining, I guess you could say. I've said this before on this show and past shows. When I first started my old show, Geek Week, we did an episode right after we found out they were reimagining Star Trek, talking about how bad an idea it is. And I've since retracted my statement. I went to see it not with a lot of high hopes and came out thoroughly just shocked and awed at what I saw and how they handled it, and was very, very happy.
What I liked about it was the characters made the characters their own. and I felt that they were, they took them to new, almost new levels, and like if they were built from, like they said, an alternate universe, they were, they, these people were, you know, in different situations than that, than, you know, Shatner and Nimoy. These, you know, both were, you know, I didn't have to hear Chris Pine going, "My friends, I need to stop you, those Klingon bastards." You know, he wasn't doing Shatner. He did enough Shatner as that it's the same person, but he didn't make it a parody, per se. And which was incredible. The story was fabulous. God, I'm using fabulous way too much. I'm going to stop that. But anyway, Star Trek, I just was really, really impressed with. You there, Wes? I think we might have lost Wes. I'm going to go on and do a couple of my movies now that, you know, that I've liked over the last probably year and everything. We had mentioned Up. One of my favorite other movies that we had seen was The Hangover. It was a supposed to be a know-nothing comedy, you know, just, and it blossomed into one of the funniest films I had seen this year. It literally had me, you know, laughing my butt off, and it was just, you know, going the situation that these guys were in Las Vegas, if anyone hasn't seen the movie. It's a movie about four guys who are going for a bachelor party, and one of the participants had slipped some roofies into some, you know, drinks, and everyone basically has to put together in Las Vegas what had happened the night before when they wake up and their suite is a complete mess and such. It was really a really well movie, and it actually had Mike Tyson in it. It had Heather Graham. It had, you know, just, it was just very, very, very well done. And, you know, I just thought it was really well. Animation-wise, we had mentioned Up already. So another one that I'd like to talk about was Coraline. It was amazing. Coraline was, if you haven't seen Coraline, I would totally recommend it. It's based off of a Neil Gaiman book, and it was just very, very well done. And you okay, Wes?
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I had a technical glitch there, and suddenly
that's
had a bit of cough.
We're talking about Coraline.
Yeah, I heard you.
And the film is based off the Neil Gaiman book, and they caught the mood throughout the film, and the animation is so dark and scary almost in some ways. My son was even, you know, he's 10 years old, he will never admit to it, but he was even scared a little bit by the villainous in the story, just how well it was done. It reminded me a lot of A Nightmare Before Christmas, which is another Tim Burton, you know, film that we were talking about. And
if I'm not mistaken, I think the same production company did both movies.
Really? And that makes sense, because you could see it just with the way the animation was just incredible. And it just flew very well through the whole story, and it didn't feel like they skipped anything from the book.
And I will have to say that I saw it both in 2D and 3D, and either way is good. It doesn't lose anything by not being in 3D. It adds quite a bit if you see it in 3D, but you don't have to really enjoy it. It's just one of those fantastical tales that, fantastical even a word,
right.
It is on this show. It's one of those tales that just sucks you right in, and it's good for the kids, it's good for the adults. There's enough humor in it for the adults to enjoy it. It's visually stunning either way you watch it.
Another movie I really liked this last year was Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, that was on my list, too.
And
Tarantino at his absolute best.
And Shooting Nazis, and, you know, how bad can that be? It's like,
right.
It was, you know, it's like how Quentin Tarantino says, it's his universe. He can do whatever he wants with history, with his characters, and I agree. Let him do what he does the best. It was dark. It was violent. It was funny. And it just, you walked out of that theater going, wow, that was a great movie, you know.
It ticked every notch on the Tarantino checklist of what's supposed to be in a Tarantino film, but then added some stuff to it also. And
Very much so. It's probably in my top five of the favorite Quentin Tarantino movies that I've seen.
You know, Tarantino, there's another topic.
Hey, this is good. This is really good.
I would still have to say, even after seeing that, my favorite of all time Tarantino film is still Reservoir Dogs. I think it's just, you can't beat the script on that. I mean, I love all the other ones, and some of them are up on par with it. I just like the cast he has in that movie. And it's the first time I really saw Steve Buscemi in a character that wasn't just totally weird rat face guy. And I just was floored about how good it was. And the plot twist in the end is pretty good, and just the way it ended is great. And Tarantino is the master when it comes to writing. And very famous, much like Joss Whedon, for punching up scripts when they're not so great and putting dialogue in them. Because there are just some Hollywood movies out there that you would not believe that Tarantino wrote dialogue for.
Well, him, Kevin Smith, and Joss Whedon are famous for their dialogue, if you think about it.
Yeah, they are. One movie that comes to mind that I know Tarantino wrote a lot of the script part of was Crimson Tide. And Joss Whedon, I think, wrote some of, like, The Rock, and he wrote some of Con Air, and he works with Jerry Bruckheimer quite a bit. Because if you've ever seen a Michael Bay, Jerry Bruckheimer movie, it's all action, and you really need help with the script.
I agree completely with that. All right, and then we had, you know, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Yes.
Each one of these movies just get better and better. And, you know, it's hard to believe, you know, that Daniel Radcliffe is still, 15, 16 years old anymore. That he, you know, I'm glad they haven't gotten rid of any of the actors. They've done it continuously pretty much for the last, 9 years almost? 10 years?
Yes.
Of creating these movies, and they've kept the same actors just to make it a little more believable, but it's hard to picture any of them as kids anymore. And the stories are just, as the books got darker and darker, the films have gotten darker, which is nice. They haven't tried to keep them light and airy, don't want to scare the kids type thing. And the Harry Potter films have gotten dark, continuously darker, and I'm glad to hear with the last book, they're making it into two movies.
A lot of people initially thought that was just so they could capitalize and make more money, but they're right in the fact that you can't pare down the Deathly Hallows and cut subplots out, because every subplot in that book is integral to the story.
Exactly.
So you're going to get, for the first time in Harry Potterville, a full-on adaptation of the book, I think. I will have to say that my impression of Half-Blood Prince was, when I read the book, it felt like a filler book that was kind of bridging some of the storylines and getting stuff ready for the final book. So it was, the book itself, while a great read, is not as strong as some of the other entries. But the movie, they turned, to me, a ho-hum book into a fantastic movie. And visually, these books are written very visually. If you read J.K. Rowling, she describes everything with not boring detail. Like, there's people that describe stuff wonderfully, like Anne Rice, but she'll take 3 pages to describe what shirt Lestat's wearing, as opposed to the description in the Harry Potter books are just fun to read. It makes your eyes feel good just to read the stuff.
Well, exactly.
And
one of the things that William and I do every night when he's here with us is I read to him before he goes to bed. Just, you know, it's a little father and son tradition type thing. And we've been going through all the Harry Potter books. Right now we're on Order of the Phoenix, and that is a frippin' long book just to read to somebody out loud.
Right.
So we've been going at it for almost 6 months because he's only with us, you know, a couple nights a week. But, man, it's just rereading it out loud, you even visualize what she's saying. You know, it's almost like visualizing music, per se.
I will have to say that Order of the Phoenix is probably my absolute favorite of all the Harry Potter books, just because so much action is going on. And the one gripe I have with the movie is that the whole bit in the Department of Mysteries is pared down in the movie as opposed to what happens in the book.
Oh, very much.
There's a lot more action with the children. And I thought visually it was great, but it just, and I understand you don't want to have 2.5-hour movies, but, you know, because they complain about kids getting antsy, but from what I remember from taking my, she was probably 7 or 8-year-old daughter to see the first one, she didn't get antsy one bit throughout that whole movie, and it was 2.5 hours long. And I think they've lost some of the fantastic elements of the Hogwarts story in the later movies after Chris Columbus quit directing them. Because you got stellar directors like Alfonso Cuarón, who did the third one. He made it more adult-like, like the book kind of was beginning to get to be like. And then Mike Newell did the fourth book, which I'm having one of my weekly brain farts on the title.
Goblet of Fire.
And what I love is that they're using British actors in it because it's a completely British story produced by American production companies. And they kept the feel and flavor of it other than, you know, I never understood why they had to change the name from Philosopher's Stone to Sorcerer's Stone, except that they thought the Americans wouldn't understand what a philosopher was.
Exactly.
And they're probably right. But, it was necessary at that point for them to film two versions of a bunch of scenes because they mentioned philosopher or Sorcerer's Stone. And I just thought they were great, and the fact that they've got special editions of those movies coming out, which have longer director's cuts as opposed to theatrical cuts, makes the immense world of Harry Potter more fun to watch, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they include in the further movies.
True. I agree, because there's like, well, what about this? What about that? You know, and you go through, and you're going, well, yeah, but they can't talk about, you know, when Harry did certain things in the subplots or something, or
the biggest subplot I've heard people complain about is in the fourth book when Hermione's trying to, you know, help the house elves and does all the buttons with spew on them. And
oh, I know.
What is it? The society
brings Dobby back in the fourth and fifth films.
Yes, that's the thing. Dobby's a major character in some of these books, and they completely cut him out, and they have to put him in this book. In the last movie, he has to be in it.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a famous bit where they wanted to cut out, what's the other elf, the house elf that lives at Grimwald Place? Creature. They wanted to cut Creature out of Order of the Phoenix, and J.K. said, you may not want to do that because it's kind of important later on. And then there's a scene in one of the bars in one of the movies where they see the guy that runs the bar, and it's actually, you know, Dumbledore's brother, and he needs to be in it too. So there's so many characters that have to be there even though they don't do much.
Exactly.
If you go back, now I've gone back since I've seen all the movies so far, and the last book's out, you see hints in every chapter of every book leading up to what happens. And it's amazing how she just crafted all that stuff in there, and she must have notebooks like you wouldn't believe in writing that stuff. Because, you know, they mentioned Sirius Black in the first book, you know.
Right.
And they start laying the groundwork for all these different characters to show up. And the cast they've assembled for the adult characters in these movies is fantastic. You know, the greatest character in the whole thing was, of course, David Tennant playing Barty Crouch Jr. I'm a David Tennant fan. But I'm looking forward to seeing Bill Nighy play as Grimgauer. I think it's going to be very good. And we'll reserve this discussion for another show also.
Let's make a Harry Potter show note.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, next movie.
One.
What's up?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to go on to the next movie that I was thinking.
All right, I was going to throw one out there real quick. That's all right.
Yeah,
One that I was just not wanting to see at all, that I didn't think was going to be any good. There's actually two of these I'm going to talk about. The first one, it didn't strike my interest. I didn't like the third one that much.
And then when I finally saw it, it's one of those I never want to see, and when I finally see it, I got to eat crow because that ended up being pretty good, was Terminator Salvation. I thought it was going to be bad and was surprised at how decent it was. I won't say it's the greatest film ever, but as far as a Terminator sequel without Schwarzenegger in most of it,
sure,
it was really good.
I didn't see it because I was the same way you were. The genre, like, oh, God, they're doing another Terminator movie. What are they going to do, bring Arnold back as, you know, the lead Terminator or something? And it's just, but after everyone started going to see it, everyone was like, gotta go see it, gotta go see it. Now that's out on DVD, I probably will pick it up because just with how the reviews have been and what everyone's been saying, how good it is, actually.
It's worth a watch, and it didn't drop the storyline left over from the third one, which I didn't think the third one was horrible. I just think it could have been produced a little better. They should have tried to figure out some way to get James Cameron interested in it because he's the one that did the first two and made them masterpieces. And James Cameron's one of those directors. It's his property. He should be allowed to do it. I mean, he took a little-known, somewhat cultish sci-fi film and made it into a big, huge thing with the sequel to Alien and set a path of destruction after it that, you know, some of it's good and some of it's bad. But Cameron seems to be able to raise things to new heights, and we'll get into Cameron in a little bit.
Exactly.
But the other one I didn't want to see because it looked utterly crappy and useless to me was X-Men Origins Wolverine, and I thoroughly enjoyed it too.
Wolverine got a bad rap, and I think mostly because of how bad X3 was.
Right.
And everyone was just, and, you know, comic book fans, if, you know, you displease them, they don't want to hear it. You know, if they don't want to see it, they don't want to deal with the people, you know, the movie at all. And there's been so many bad comic book movies out there over the last 15, 20 years that they've become very fickle. And with how bad X3 was, they're going, oh God, they're milking more money and bringing out X-Men Origins Wolverine. And I agree with you. It was actually a decent movie. It was the story, you know, you can't go by what's in the comic book. You have to dispel that world of belief a little bit and bring in what the comic book, you know, that the movie is its own story, that it's own universe per se. And
right,
that,
you have to say the X-Men movie universe is a lot different than the comic universe. And
oh, very
you have
much
to go
so.
With it being an origin story in the movie universe. There was one thing that I didn't like about it is, you know, Wolverine fights Sabretooth quite a bit in the first movie, but Sabretooth never acknowledges him. And I know Wolverine doesn't remember who Sabretooth is, but making him his brother in the X-Men Origins, and Liv Schreiber was great at it. It just doesn't click with the first movie that well.
No, well, they also, you know, had two different actors, and in the comic book, Sabretooth is a blonde, and they kept that in the first X-Men movie, where Liv Schreiber is, you know, on the other hand, very much a brunette, and they kept him a brunette in the movie. So, and he stayed looking the same through, what, 100 years. He's not going to all of a sudden dye his hair blonde and let it grow out.
Well, I mean, that's not necessarily the problem I had with it. The problem I had with Liv Schreiber plays him like the wisecracking character that he is in the comic books, but in the first movie, he barely said a line and didn't acknowledge Wolverine at all and just kind of was the big heavy, and that was it. No character development at all. And I understand there's a lot of mutants you got to show, but the story between Wolverine and Sabretooth is a pretty big one, I think.
But I thought they did a very good job in Wolverine by introducing all the different mutants.
Yes, they did. And you got to see some you hadn't seen yet. And
exactly.
I'm looking forward to any sequels that they have with it. And the fact that they threw that little nugget with variant of the movie having Professor X show up, you know, that was a nice touch. He knows what's going on the whole time, but he's got to let Wolverine figure it out on his own.
Exactly.
Moving down the list, the sequel that should have been good, but I thought was nothing but just a big explosion, was Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Agreed.
I've had many arguments with people over this movie about how good it was. It's not that good, I don't think. It, you know, I enjoy watching Shia LaBeouf. He's fun to watch in these movies, and you know, I felt like this movie was just one long shot of cameras moving around Megan Fox's nicely proportioned body. But
Shia plays the same role in every movie he's in, kind of like
the fast talking nerd guy.
Yeah, he was the same way in Indiana Jones. He was the same way in the first Transformer movie. It's just over and over again, he's the same thing.
I actually enjoyed him in Indiana Jones. Now, I didn't enjoy all of Indiana Jones. I think the movie was good up until the CGI monkey started showing up and everybody's, you know, it turned into CGI land with the alien spaceships at the end. But the movie was pretty enjoyable. And Shia wasn't too bad, and, you know, he was, I can't think of anybody else that'd be a good indie son, and I hope if they do another one, they kind of explore that a little bit more, but God, he was awful in Transformers 2, and so was the whole subplot of it. I mean, how many times are you going to destroy Megatron and Optimus Prime and bring them back with the stupid piece of cube, all right?
Exactly.
And basically, it's the same movie, they just have different locations and added some gay robots to it this time, the little rappy leg-humping robots.
Anyway.
I mean, that's... It was just awful. It's like they rushed it as fast as they could into the theaters, and it was like, I bet they didn't even have a script finished when they started filming it. And then you took some good characters that were created, like Josh Duhamel's character with the military, and just relegated them to back, you know, just side characters. I mean, there was no development. John Turturro was good. He was about one of the best parts of the movie. But even his wife cracking stuff was a little bit Adam Sandler-ish goofy.
Oh, exactly.
I didn't see it in the theater because I knew it wasn't going to be good. I finally saw it on video, and my opinion hasn't changed. You know, as a purist that collects DVDs, I, of course, have it in my collection because I enjoyed the first one. And if you want an example of one I thought that was done right, the G.I. Joe. I went in with very low expectations. And, yes, it's hammy, it's campy, it's based on a cartoon and action figure series, so... Much like Transformers, how could you make it not campy? But I enjoyed it. It was fun. And seeing Christopher Eccleston playing the villain, that was great too.
Oh, it was just when he popped up on the screen, my son looked at me and said, Dad, that's the Doctor. It was like, no, that's Despero.
He plays Destro, and he's got that nice, thick Scottish accent. And the only thing that kind of pulled me out of the movie was when they introduced Cobra Commander at the end, and he's a little bit really cheesy, but if you think back on the cartoon, if you loved it growing up, Cobra Commander was the worst character on the show. Except he was voiced by the guy that does Starscream, which kind of made it fun, but I couldn't really find fault with it. I mean, it's futuristic, the weapons are cool, and even Marlon Wayans wasn't that bad in it. I think we got a slate of very wooden action stars coming out, though. The guy that played Duke was kind of like just insert an actor here and let him recite the lines, because anything else I've seen that guy in, Tatum Channing, I think his name is, he's terrible. I saw this movie called Fighting, and everyone talks about how good it is, and he's just awful in it.
Right.
Kind of like Sam, what's his name, who was in the Terminator movie and is in the main character in Avatar. He's wooden, too. He has no expression, doesn't act very well. He just kind of reads his lines and goes along. Sam Worthington. And they're going to make him a major action star. I'm hoping that Clash of the Titans with him in it is going to be as good as it looks.
I saw the preview for it, actually, today. And it looks great. But I remember the old Clash of the Titans movie with Sir Laurence Olivier and what was the lead's name? Who played...
Harry Hamlin.
Yeah, played Odysseus.
Mr. L.A. Law.
Exactly. And it was just, you know, I have to see what it's like because, you know, I'm used to the cheese factor and the Ray Harryhausen special effects with the stop motion. So,
come on, you can't beat Ray Harryhausen classic films. Come on, you know how hard it was to do effects like that? And, yes, they look very primitive by today's standards. But back then, when that movie came out, everybody was awed about the Medusa and Pegasus flying and the Kraken coming out. It was just a big epic film. Now they got CGI, so it takes, you know, half the work out of it. And I'm not saying it's not hard to create CGI images like that.
Right.
But there's a big difference between creating CGI and moving an inch, taking a photograph, and doing a 30-minute scene with a bunch of monsters. That's amazing to me.
Well, exactly. It's, you know, history. this is film history, seeing it. So they're basically, Hollywood once again is not coming up with any new original ideas, and they're coming with, you know, Clash of the Titans and all these other remakes that are coming down the pike.
Well, I mean, there's like remakes that have, they've been trying to get off the ground. Like, they've tried to remake the original Porky's. They've been trying to remake Revenge of the Nerds. I'm like, why can't these movies, just as good as they are, classic films, stand up on their own and come up with something new?
Well, they're talking about remaking Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, I know. I heard about that. It's like, why would you ever, ever want to do that?
Exactly.
I mean, all the fan base are going to see it just to see how bad it is.
Oh, exactly.
But other than that, I mean, if you're going to do a movie about Buffy, you got to do it with the TV cast. And you know what? I don't think any of them would do it. They've moved on, and Sarah Michelle Gellar is notorious for not wanting to be pigeonholed as Buffy, although I can't say her acting choices since she's been out of it have been great, but she's been pretty decent in most everything. Like, Southland Tales comes to mind. It was a good movie.
Right.
Grudge, not a fan of it.
Oh. One movie that I really, really liked this last year will, you know, surprise a few people, was Moon. With
Moon. Sam Rockwell.
Exactly. Sam Rockwell and Kevin Spacey, actually, as the robot computer. And directed by David Bowie's son. It was just a truly, truly incredible film. I always liked Sam Rockwell and everything he's pretty much done from Galaxy Quest on. And
yeah.
He pretty much, he's won me over as a lead actor, though, with this film. He just, it was basically him on screen for 90 minutes talking to himself and portrayed the story, which was extremely, extremely well done, and took it to new levels of personal drama and tied into a sci-fi background about, you know, personal realization, finding out who you are, and, you know, having to deal with your own mortality, per se, and dealing, you know, with being on the moon and having to deal with the drama with that, that, you know, hey, I'm not really who I think I am, not to spoil the movie or anything.
Right. And I haven't seen it yet, but it's definitely on my list to see, and I'll probably go get it sometime this week. But it looks phenomenal, and every critic I've read has talked about how fine a performance it is, and it's sad that he probably won't get noticed at come Oscar time on Tuesday, I might add. They're announcing the Oscar nominees. But which leads us into the movie that I think is the big talk of the town right now, is Avatar. Now, not to be confused with you fans of Avatar, The Last Airbender, which is coming out as a movie directed by M. Night Shyamalan. It's just called The Last Airbender because he couldn't get the title in quick enough for James Cameron. Now, Cameron's one of those guys that, like, he has not filmed a movie since Titanic, which up until this week was the top grossing film of all time with over $1 billion worth of revenues. But the 10 years he took to make this movie, I think, were well worth it. My take on it is plot, not all there. It's just kind of a blah film. But if you see it in 3D with all the effects that Cameron has, like, everyone talks about Weta, who did the Lord of the Rings movies, about how much they advanced the technology of CGI and how much George Lucas has advanced CGI. The team behind Avatar have advanced it to almost realistic proportions. It's unreal what this movie looks like.
But Avatar was a great, great film as for a special effects movie and such.
Right.
It was done so well, you stop thinking that this is a 3D movie. It feels like you're watching this almost in real life, that it's all happening right in front of you, that you don't think it's an animated film after a while. You think these characters are alive. You forget that Sigourney Weaver or some of the other cast members, you know, animated blue, and you start just thinking them, this is a real environment. And it's breathtaking. The cinematography, if you want to go into it, is truly incredible. Just the scenes, there's scenes where they're looking down over a waterfall and they're on a big thick branch, and you almost feel like you could fall down into it. It just almost felt like you came into their world.
There was that scene where he goes to run to jump and land in all the little brush and slow his descent down to the ground where he looks over the side, and I actually felt my stomach lurch.
Exactly.
Because I felt like I was that high up.
And it was truly, you know, it should win everything for all the visuals. You know, go for it. Win the Academy Award. Story-wise, it was horrible. It was everything you've seen 2 zillion times before. It was Pocahontas. It was basically Dances with Wolves. It was the same story put into the future. And you knew how it was going to end. You knew that it was just over and over and over the same corny dialogue, the same story. You knew that they were going to fall in love. You knew that, you know, he was going to become an avatar at the end. Oops, sorry, didn't mean to blow that for anybody.
I think most everyone's seen it by now.
Exactly.
Based on
and it was a good movie, but I don't think it's the best movie ever and such.
No, honestly, people may slap me around for saying this. I still like Titanic better. I think, Titanic's a love story. You know that going into it, so just enjoy it for what it is. It's a visual masterpiece with good acting and a good plot behind it. That's it.
And the thing is, how is this movie going to translate onto TV? When
it's not.
For the home video and quality, you're not going to have those stupid glasses at home and such. It's not going to. And if I couldn't see this movie in 3D, I wouldn't have paid the extra money to see it. It was, you know, it wouldn't have felt the same way. Like Wes, you just said, you felt your stomach lurch when you looked over the side. You wouldn't see that if that wasn't 3D. And
no, you wouldn't.
Even on a big screen TV, like a 50-inch or whatever, a 32-inch, you're not going to get the same feeling from seeing it. And I don't think it has the lasting value that everyone's hoping for.
No, it doesn't have the strong character development and script behind it. You'd be captivated watching this 2.5-hour visual masterpiece without it being in 3D. And it's probably because they spent a lot of time on the technology to make it look that good. And, you know, the script's adequate. I'm not saying it's a horrible story. It's just one that we've seen 600 million times before. Just some of it's done better story-wise than Night Dances with Wolves or even Pocahontas story-wise. But this, you know what's going to happen. It's an A to Z action, drama, romance film. You know that the crazy military guy is going to be crazy and they're going to fight him in the end. You know that the suits that run the corporation, which I was surprised I didn't call Weyland Yutani, but that's just me. The suits that run the corporation were going to be, you know, trying to run this indigenous life people out of there. The creatures on the planet were going to slowly but surely accept this non-real character into their, you know, being, which really probably wouldn't happen in real life because these characters are so guarded about everything. You could tell that they didn't
Cameron
want him there.
Actually, stole it from one of his own movies. If you think about a lot of it, if you think of it, was Aliens. They had the heartless corporation trying to capture one of the aliens to take it back for profit, and they figured the best way to do it was to have the Marines have the eggs planted in them. And then,
right.
And then, if you remember, there was the battle suit that they had at the end of Avatar. They had that at the end of the movie Aliens.
Not to mention the fact Ripley was in both movies.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
she even had a similar character as to Ripley. She was a little bit more, you know, soft-edged, but basically the character that Sigourney Weaver plays in the movie is the same as Ripley.
Exactly.
Which I don't fault her. That's just the way it was written.
No, and I... It's not as much as, not saying, like you said, it's not a bad movie. It was completely enjoyable. I saw it today, and it was a great film to, you know, watch. It didn't feel like 2.5 hours. It flew by incredibly, just because I was visually taken away and transported.
You didn't want to stop watching because of all the 3D effects, basically. The little, to me, the most amazing thing in it was the little fluffy pieces of tree that were floating around in front of your field of vision. You can almost grab one, but I mean,
exactly.
On 2D, it's just going to look like spots on a screen.
And now
what will happen,
though, is going to start coming out even more so in 3D, than they already have. In the next year, they have at least two dozen movies coming out that are going to have 3D, and it's not even all animated.
Right, and some of the things about that is it's just going to take a crappy movie and make it better because you saw it in 3D. There's a few that are coming out they've announced in 3D, though, that I think are going to be good, whether you watch it 2D, 3D. One of them's Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. They've announced that it's going to be in 3D.
Right.
And just seeing the wand work in that in 3D is going to be phenomenal, but 2D would be just fine.
And that could be another show that we could talk about. What
yeah,
3D. About 3D. And is it worth? Is it where the movie industry is going and what it could do?
I think they're going to release Avatar with the red and blue 3D, and it's going to be nowhere near as good. You're going to see some 3D effects. It's going to be crap. But they got the 3D TVs coming out here pretty soon, which you can watch through the glasses and see it the way it's supposed to be seen. So Avatar will be able, within the next 2 or 3 years, to be enjoyed the way it was supposed to, albeit on a smaller screen. But it's just, you know, getting into Avatar for a second, it passed Titanic as the top grossing film of all time. But that's just inflated because the ticket prices are about $13 to $15 a piece. So, of course, it's going to reach the billion mark pretty quick.
Exactly.
Because people are seeing this movie 2 or 3 times because you can only see it in 3D. If this movie had been released in the theater as a 2D film, it would have made probably about $200-300 million U.S. domestic gross, and that would have been it. Maybe $500 million, but that's it. I think people would have seen it and gone, "Ah, the story's all right. It's visually stunning, blah, 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 blah." You know, it's going to win at the Oscars. I can almost predict James Cameron's going to pick up another Oscar for this. But part of me thinks, you know, Cameron's been, you know, putting this masterpiece out for 10 years. He could have put out another True Lies. That would have been great.
Well, exactly. Another movie that I really, really liked this year, and I did see it in 3D, was another animated film, which was Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Yeah, everyone tells me that's good. I haven't seen that either.
It is fantastic. It looks like a cute premise, and the story is actually really enjoyable, and the 3D effects in that were almost as good as anything else I've seen in 3D par, you know, Avatar, you know, before that. The movie was made for it, and it just was really, really smartly done. And there's jokes in it that, you know, the kids loved and enjoyed. The parents, you know, got other things in it, and it was just really, you know, it was a fun film to see, you know, to see in the theater. Just it's a huge spectacle type thing for an animated movie.
Right.
And
I think they've announced that all Disney films from this point on are going to be in 3D. Whether they're good or bad, which is good. I think the hook to get people in the theaters now is the 3D movies. The few live-action 3Ds, now I've seen the animated films look great in 3D, but the beauty of that is they look great in 2D.
Right.
But, you know, I've seen, so far it's mostly been horror films in 3D. I've seen the Final Destination, which was really eye-popping cool, but once again, 2D, just a horror film. And then I saw My Bloody Valentine 3D. And what was cool about that is they didn't throw a lot of stuff at the screen. It was just the depth perception. Seeing down the tunnel was cool because it looked like it was the real length of a tunnel. Going around, when people move around and stuff moves past your field of vision, that's where the 3D really looks cool.
Right.
Not necessarily stuff coming at you because, you know, that's a gimmick. If you go back to the 80s when they did Jaws 3D and Friday the 13th 3D, those movies look really cool in 3D. But
right.
That's because they throw things at you every 5 minutes. Nowadays, it's just an added enhancement to the film. And apparently, the technology is there where you can take a movie like Star Wars and just convert it to 3D. So you got the depth.
Oh, Lucas is already talking about it.
I would be very interested to see those movies in 3D, and I think it's a great way. You see, they should go back like they used to and re-release classic films in the theater so you can see them on the big screen. I had an opportunity about 5 or 6 years ago. The Fox Theater in Atlanta does its summer movie festival, and they showed the restored Godfather, and that looked amazing. I mean, it was just to see the Godfather on a big screen like you were supposed to. I was too young to see it when it came out. And, you know, seeing the re-released Star Wars trilogy on the big screen was great. That's the way I remembered it as a kid.
Right.
There are some good points about going to see a movie in the theater.
Right.
Home video. Go ahead.
We're, I was just going to say, we're about the same age, so we've seen pretty much a lot of the Star Wars saga at the theaters, the original saga, I should say.
Right.
And, you know, we were kids when it first came out, but to see, you know, to capture that magic that you felt being a kid and seeing the original Star Wars in the theater, it's fantastic.
You know, I would have to say that when I saw the prequel trilogy in the theater, it wasn't as magical to me just because they're so tonally different.
Oh, very
you know,
much
it's the Star Wars universe. But when I saw Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I felt like a little kid again.
It was interesting. It felt like the second trilogy, you know, the episode 1, 2, and 3, it felt like it was almost like prepackaged, felt like something glossy, where the original, you know, episode 4, 5, and 6 felt very raw and such. But I'll still admit it, when I saw episode 1 at the theaters when it came out, as soon as the theme hit, you know, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, I got the goosebumps. I felt that way. Oh, my God.
I did, too. I'll admit that when I saw that, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be like a kid. Then Jar Jar came on the screen, and it was all over.
Oh, exactly. You know, that killed it for most people.
You know, the first time they popped those lightsabers out, I was like, yeah, this is going to be great. And plus, watching the actual Jedi fight with lightsabers the way that they were meant to, you know, Luke and Darth Vader just kind of hack at each other, but these guys are flipping everywhere, throwing stuff. I mean, it was fun to watch.
Exactly.
But by the time episode 2 and 3 rolled around, it was just a couple of sci-fi films that happened to be set in the Star Wars universe to me.
Exactly.
Until Vader shows up at the very end, and then you're like, oh, it's a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, exactly. Wes, I got to wrap things up soon. So is there any more movies you want to hit while we're...
You know, I think we've done enough damage for today.
Okay, a couple movies I do want to touch on just real quickly.
Okay.
Angels and Demons.
Yes.
Was great. The sequel to is it a prequel or a sequel to?
If you go by the books, it came before the Da Vinci Code. But as far as movies are concerned, it's set afterwards. And I thought they did a good job translating that book. I thought it was great. And you know, Ewan McGregor, there again, another actor that's really good in just about everything.
Well, as soon as you saw him, you knew he was going to be the bad guy, though.
Yeah. Especially if you read the
book. Another one. But, you know, another one that you might want to touch, we could also say was a couple different ones was, I dare say it, was Twilight Saga, New Moon.
I just got a shudder.
I know, but my wife loves it, you know. She's like, oh, it's, you know, it's a kid's book, but I love it, you know. It's basically how we feel about, a lot of people feel about Harry Potter. They feel just as passionate about Twilight.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I respect Twilight fans for their fandom and respect the fact that most of those guys are also Harry Potter fans, but I just don't like the premise. It's my personal thing. Nothing against people that like Twilight. I have some very close friends that are huge fans of it, but I just don't get it. It's Dawson's
right.
Creek with fangs.
Then there was a couple other movies that, you know, we had this last year, Up in the Air with George Clooney.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be fantastic. A Serious Man. It's a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, you can never go wrong with the Coen Brothers.
No, they've done just so much. That's another show we could talk about.
Yeah, I'm writing this stuff down as we speak. I got like months worth of topics just on. We should do a show about topics.
Hey, I like that.
That would be like our clip show.
Exactly. The best of show.
Yeah, the best of show. Some of those.
Public Enemies, like you said, with Michael Mann movie.
Yeah.
Julie and Julia.
Oh, that was great. I saw that recently, actually. And you know, it's considered a chick flick, but it's not really. I have a little soft spot for Amy Adams. I think she's a good up-and-coming actress that people should pay attention to. Her movie Enchanted that came out a couple years ago, which is like Disney on crack. And it's made by Disney, but it's like, what if a Disney princess came into our world? Was freaking phenomenal, I thought.
Exactly. Then a couple of others that were, you know, while you were off the air, I mentioned The Hangover.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that. That's one of the funniest movies I've seen this year.
Oh, it was hilarious. We literally had people standing up in the theater because it was so funny that they were laughing so hard.
I think the next movie like that that's coming out is going to be Hot Tub Time Machine. If you haven't seen trailers for that, that just looks like it's going to be just freaking hilarious.
Exactly. Then also The Blind Side.
Oh, with
Sandra Bullock, about the football player.
She's supposed to be up for Academy Award nominations on this.
Monsters vs. Aliens was a great animated movie. It made fun of literally every 1950s movie you've seen. And, you know, that's the most I could think of that was on my list. I probably missed quite a few that I thought were, like, the best movie in the world. But, you know, I think we did okay. Oh, another one that real quick to touch on was Watchmen.
Oh, yeah, I meant to throw Watchmen out there. Not a big fan of Alan Moore's Watchmen series. Just never had been. I'm sure the movie is great. That's one of those I'm not real keen to watch, and I'm sure if I ever see it, we'll probably think it's fantastic. It just doesn't seem to float my boat. Now, his other stuff, like From Hell, and I think he did The Road to Perdition, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly.
Graphic novels that turned into fantastic movies, so I should probably watch it. It's supposed to be like what it would really be like if we had superheroes.
Well, exactly. Also, V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
Which then we also, you know, there was some good stuff out this past year. I'm sure we've forgotten a lot of people's favorites, and they're probably yelling at their podcast right now, going, "You forgot this!" And you know, if you want, send us feedback. You know, tell us what we missed.
Yes, please send us feedback.
You know, we'd like to know what we've missed or whatever. And you know, if you like the new format of the show with us doing it and yelling back and forth at each other, you know, that'd be great.
Yes, and, you know, feel free to come on the show. If you come to our TalkShoe page, if you're getting this off the feeds off iTunes, our TalkShoe page is www.talkshoe.com/TC/30659. It brings you to the actual page where all of our archived episodes and new current episodes are. I also have a abbreviated page at www.ciashock.podomatic.com, which I've put kind of the best of episodes on there. Trying to think of all the places we're at. If you want to send feedback, you can come to either one of those sites, and there's a place to type in feedback, or you can send me an email at wrhubbard2006@gmail.com. Feedback would be nice. We don't get a lot of feedback, which might be a good thing because we have quite a few listeners, so if everybody seems to be happy with it, great. I'd like to hear from someone. We would like to hear from someone, sorry. I got to get used to that again.
Right, and, you know, send us emails. We'll read your emails over the air when we get them and such. You know, we're not afraid to take criticism or compliments.
Right, and if you want to record a feedback and send it to us, I'm working on getting sound effects and stuff put into the show to make it a little bit more lively. And also, if you listen to the show live, there's a live chat here where you can type in whatever you want to into it, and you can, you know, give us a impression of what we're talking about. If you've got links we can go to, the links will show up in the chat. You can do all kinds of neat things in there. Other than that, we'll see you next week where Mike won't be with us, but I hope several other people will be, where our topic is movies that made you cry.
Enjoy.
The week after that, we're talking about all things Joss Whedon, from Toy Story all the way up to Dollhouse, which is the newest show that's been canceled. Poor man has a habit of getting the show canceled when it's on the spot. But other than that,
Dr. Horrible too.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that. Dr. Horrible is brilliant. We'll talk about that in 2 weeks.
Exactly.
Other than that, thank you for sitting through our diatribe about movies of 2009. If we missed anything, let us know. We'll mention it again in another show because we like to go off on tangents. Although we did a pretty good job of sticking with the topic today. I will have to say.
a guest just popped in that said
Last Dollhouse was Mad Max. I have to see that one. Yeah, thanks for being here, Mike, and everybody. Mike's our new co-host, so please join us next time Same bat time, same bat channel. Actually, the time may change. So just come to our TalkShoe page at www.talkshoe/tc/30659 and see the updates we might have. Other than that, have a good week, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.